Hello, all you growers out there, Jordan River here. Thank you for tuning in to GrowCast today. Just a quick reminder, membership registration is open for GrowPass, the GrowCast membership, and you can go to mygrowpass.com right now and check it out. We've got a package that's right for you. Get in on the discounts, the extra podcasts, the live streams, the giveaways, all of that fun stuff at mygrowpass.com. What are you waiting for, folks? You've been missing out on some fun stuff over there. Today we've got an incredible episode for you. Greg Bryant from the Beneficial Insectary and Green Methods is on the line to talk about pests, pest control, and beneficial insects. It is an A-plus episode. I know you're going to love it. Before we jump in with Greg, let's give some love to Cultilux, one of our fine, fine partners. Just go to Cultilux.com, C-U-L-T-I-L-U-X.com. Promo code GROWCAST10 gets you 10% off your Cultilux fixtures and bulbs just for listening to this show. And MyGrowPass.com members get 25% off site-wide at Cultilux.com. Cultilux is the industry-leading manufacturers of CMH lamps and fixtures, the specialized spectrum for cannabis flowering. Their high efficiency LECs are prominent for their unique wattage, CRI, PAR value, lumen output, and overall lighting performance, providing the plants with the exact lighting they need to flourish and grow to their fullest potential. They thrive under the Cultilux lighting. Cultilux.com, promo code GROWCAST10 for the leading industry standard CMH bulbs, 10% off with that promo code. MyGrowPass.com for 25% off. Cultilux, everybody. All right, I know you're going to love this episode, so let's jump right into it with Greg Bryant. Enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please tell a friend about GrowCast. Share the show. Always appreciate that. Make sure you're subscribed. Give us a good rating and review. Big, big help out there, guys. Appreciate that. And also, The Homegrown Helpers by Rob Smith, another cannabis-growing podcast. And check out my show, The Coffee Health and Science Podcast. Great episode with Sanjeev Chopra from Harvard Medical. Go check it out. Today we have on GrowCast an excellent guest. I'm so excited to speak to Greg Bryant from the Beneficial Insectary. How's it going, Greg?
Good. How are you?
Doing great, man. Thank you for coming on the show. We were just talking off air. You're an easy to talk to guy, man. And what we were just saying is I've done so many episodes of the show. We've really dive deep into a lot of different subjects. And we've had some integrated pest management people talk about insects and predatory insects and things like that, beneficial insects, but we've never really done a deep dive. So when I saw you pop up on my calendar, I got super excited. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come and speak to me and my audience.
Yeah, of course. I'm always happy to talk about bugs.
Cool, man. I like that. Let's do intros first. As I said, Greg Bryant is an IPM specialist from the Beneficial Insectary. You can find the Beneficial Insectary at insectary.com, and also greenmethods.com is their retail site for all sorts of biological controls and natural pest control. Right, Greg?
That's correct. So any like home grow or really small grow can go to Green Methods and they can purchase directly on there. And then our site for larger growers is insectary.com, like you said.
Nice. Awesome. I let's get the formalities out of the way before we dive in, because I'm going to ask you about all the specific cannabis pests. I'm going to ask you about the cannabis aphid. I want to dive into everything here. But first, what is the mission of your work and also the mission of the Beneficial Insectary itself?
Well, so our slogan is providing a natural balance for pest management. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we do. We provide beneficial insects, and it's my job to basically go around and to give the growers the technical advice about how to use biocontrol and how
that's
to
cool, man.
Make it successful in their crop.
That's really cool. I like that a lot. What got you started in this business of IPM and insects, and what brought you into cannabis, if those were in fact two separate things?
Well, they definitely were. It's kind of funny. When I was in college, I didn't even know that my current job existed. I majored in zoology, and I minored in entomology just because I happened to take an entomology class pretty early on in the curriculum, and I just loved the bugs for some reason. had a few entomology jobs right out of college, and then just kind of stumbled into the biocontrol world. A friend of a friend actually got me in the industry overall. And man, like I could not imagine myself doing anything else.
That's great, man. I think there's a little life lesson in there which is I do feel that it's really important to follow your passions. I think it's most important to follow what tweaks your curiosity and piques your interest, because like you said, your job may not exist yet. You know, my brother-in-law went to school for film, and his family was like, what are you doing going to school for film? And then, you know, the 2000s roll around and now everybody wants to create content. Like film right. production is everywhere. So he was going to school for a job that you, what are you going to move to Hollywood and be a director? You know, like that doesn't make any sense. But 10, 20, 30 years later, suddenly there's all this work for video producers. You're going to work because you love, you got your education because you love bugs. You didn't know the cannabis industry was going to explode like it did, right?
No. And well, in fact, when I first got into the biocontrol industry, I was working 99% with ornamental growers. So flowers and things like that. A few food crops here and there. And then once the cannabis boom started, like that really, really took off for the biocontrol industry in general.
No kidding, and man.
I still don't like specialize in cannabis. I do have a lot of cannabis customers.
Right.
But man, like I do the whole gamut from ornamental flowers to food crops to cannabis and hemp.
That's so cool. So my guess is people just started hitting you up, right? Like you had, people just started flooding.
For sure. Yeah. And it was so funny, man. Like in the beginning, we would get calls from people that were growing indoors. And they're like, man, I didn't think I was ever going to get pests. I'm indoors, but I've got thrips everywhere. I've got spider mites everywhere. I'm like, yeah, they'll find their way in. Like, yeah, just because you're indoors, that does not mean anything.
Man, that's great. Let's get into pest control. Before we get into the specifics, talk to me about how we should be approaching just the idea of pest control from a mind state perspective, from a philosophy perspective. I've said this before on the show, but I love what Joshua Rutherford guest said on the show. He was saying how it was a big shift for him to go from a mind state of killing everything and sterility and getting rid of everything to one of balancing life and encouraging life to thrive. Do you agree with that statement? Do you have any general thoughts or rules of thumb when it comes to the philosophy of pest control?
Oh, absolutely. And I fully agree with it being just a complete change of mindset. Mm-hmm. To do biocontrol, you have to get out of the no life at all besides your plants mentality. And really it's all about treating your grow as a whole ecosystem. Obviously it's not like a natural thing because you're growing a monocrop in this case, and you're giving all kind of fertilizer. So it's going to make the pest incredibly happy. But if you can balance the predators and the parasitoids and these natural enemies with those pests and get that balance right, you will, in essence, get more of those natural enemies in the crop than the pest. And that balance will tip in favor of the natural enemies if you do it right.
Right. So you're basically you're not trying to ever do a nuclear option. It's a constant balancing process.
A little bit, yeah. So especially with biocontrol, you would really rather have very, very low levels of pests, because those can be controlled with biocontrol, rather than all of these crazy residues that people have sprayed on their plants in the past.
Right. So how much of it is like accepting that there are going to be pests in your garden? You know, like does this work when upkept properly result in no pests?
It really depends on the pest. For thrips, things like that, things that aren't incredibly attractive to aphids, you can get those down to pretty much zero using the right natural enemies.
Right.
If you happen to get root aphids, for example, those are horrible to get rid of. For one, there's no biocontrol agent with legs or wings that will take care of them. People will try to sell Velocia, which is a little predatory rose beetle, and Scudia laelaps, which is a little predatory mite. Both of those live in the soil. People try to sell those like they will get rid of a root aphid infestation, but they won't.
Oh, wow. Hot take.
If you have extraordinarily low levels of root aphids, or if one or two find their way into the facility, if you already have those two predators built up in pretty good numbers,
they might repel them.
Exactly. They will likely prevent you from having a problem. But if you don't have them in there at all, and then you get infested with root aphids, it's not going to work. It's just not. We've seen time and time again, people put in just, in some cases, hundreds or thousands of dollars worth of these predators, and it just doesn't do anything. The aphids just reproduce so quickly that they just can't keep up.
That's wild.
With root aphids in particular, though, a lot of times that does come down to just management. And depending on what's legal in your state to use, either azadirachtin or some type of entomopathogenic fungus, like Bavaria bassiana or Iceria.
How would we apply those?
As a drench. And when I say drench, I don't just mean putting it through the spaghetti tubes. I mean actually getting in there and drenching it. It's the only way that you're even.
What do you mean, like dunking your plant? Oh, you mean a soil drench? Duh.
Soil drench, yes. Exactly.
Yeah, obviously. Okay. Yeah, no, I'm with you. A little bit stony, but I'm with you. We're here at Aphids. Talk to me about your work with aphids. Talk to me about this cannabis aphid. Is the hype real?
Oh, it absolutely is. That was the number one pest that we ran into last year. 2 years ago, it was probably russet mites were the biggest thing in cannabis that we saw. Mm-hmm. But last year, people were just absolutely overwhelmed with the cannabis aphid.
So this is a different type of aphid. It's a specific breed that prefers cannabis or was empowered by cannabis. How does this work?
So its only known host is cannabis. And I think the reason that it's becoming just so out of control is you're growing this thing's only known host and you're fertilizing the hell out of it. So that they just absolutely love it. They reproduce super quickly. And if you're already infested, natural enemies are going to have a really hard time keeping up. Even sprays, man. Like I've had people say, oh, man, I've sprayed sulfoil. I've sprayed this, that, and the third on them. And they still just come back week after week after week.
Right.
And last year, like, people literally spent thousands of dollars on lacewings trying to even get them somewhat controlled. So, like, the number one thing that I'm having my growers do this year, especially if they had cannabis aphid last year, is prevention. Prevention, prevention, prevention.
Give us some tips for prevention of the cannabis aphid.
Yes. So, we've actually seen that both species of Aphidius that we have, so there's two little, there's a little parasitoid wasp. It's in the genus Aphidius.
Oh, yeah, okay, you said a wasp.
Yeah. So, they're completely stingless. Well, for humans, anyway. Like, they're 100% harmless. Like, they couldn't hurt you if they wanted to. I can fit half a dozen of them on the tip of my finger. Like, they're tiny. But they're parasitoid wasps against aphids, and they have to have aphids to complete their life cycle. So what they do is, when they find a suitable aphid, they will sting the aphid and inject an egg into it. That egg hatches into a larva. That larva starts to eat the aphid from the inside. And it's a little bit gruesome, but what it does is it basically eats everything except the vital organs and keeps the aphid alive for about a week to 10 days. And then once that wasp is ready to pupate, it eats the vital organs off, kills the aphid, and then it spins a silk cocoon around the aphid and it turns the aphid into what's called a mummy. And it pupates inside that mummy for another week to 10 days, chews a circular hole out of the back of it once it becomes an adult wasp and flies out and does the whole thing over again.
That's insane. But
it really is, man. Like, there's some horror movies that are based on insects, I swear.
that's insane. Well, that's, first of all, that's super, super brutal. Is there like a whole microscopic war going on when you're applying these types of things? Like, can you imagine all the battles that are taking place on a microscopic level?
Yeah, seriously, like especially with the little predatory mites. I mean, you can see them without a hand lens, but it's pretty tough. But yeah, no, they're pretty small. But going back to Aphidius and the cannabis aphid prevention. So the cannabis aphid is also called the Bang aphid. Not sure how it got that name, but it's B-H-A-N-G.
Like a bong aphid. B-H-A-N-G is a bong is a traditional Indian cannabis drink. Yeah, that makes sense that it would also be called the bong aphid, because that's a traditional cannabis drink made in India.
Did not know that. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So their Latin name is Foridon cannabis, and a lot of times people will just call them Foridon as well. But going back to preventing them, I've been having people release both species that we have of the Aphidius wasp. So there's Aphidius colmani and Aphidius ervi. At first, we thought that only ervi was parasitizing them because The aphidia sloths were pretty host specific most of the time. Like the ones, the species of aphids that Kalmani likes, Ervi typically doesn't, and vice versa. And at first we were only rearing out Ervi from Foradon, but over time we started seeing Kalmani beings raised out of them too. So the good thing is both of the wasps will parasitize them. But it's still hard to control them. So I've been having people release both species of aphidius wasp as a preventative, either at like moderate rates every week or a bit higher rates every other week. And also use lacewing egg cards. So lacewings are super aggressive. Their larvae are just always hungry. Like they'll try to eat you if they're crawling on you for too long. they'll eat each other. They'll eat whatever they come across.
Aphids will included. These are lace wings. L-A-C-E.
Yeah. Lace wings. So Chrysoprila is the genus. So they're called, Chrysoprila from us. Like I said, the eggs are really affordable and we actually have, lacewing eggs on cards. So, you literally just hang the card up on,
that's cool,
on the foliage. And then in just a couple of days,
they do their thing.
Larvae will hatch out and they'll search the plants and they'll eat any aphids that they find.
That's so cool, man. I love the idea of just hanging a little house on the plant. That's such a reasonable application. You know, because that's really what we're looking for when we're looking to get away from the sprays, the heavy duty sprays. We're looking for applications that work, that are natural, and we're looking for ones that are like logical, ones that are applicable, ones that are feasible, right?
Oh, for sure. Honestly, if you have a huge grow, it's going to be pretty labor intensive to go through every week or every other week or whatever and hang these little cards on every single plant.
You're so right.
But
yeah, my co-host Wolfman just talked about that, how if you're trying to overpopulate this problem you have, the larger the scale, the harder it is. Is that a fair statement?
It is. The good thing about the eggs though is you can actually put them through a blower.
They survive?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. So our office actually tested and you can put the larvae, like the lacewing larvae themselves, through the blower and they survive just fine. So
that is wild.
Really big outdoor hemp fields. What a lot of people are doing is they'll get eggs in bulk, just pure lacewing eggs. They'll mix it with their own vermiculite and then put it through a blower and just blow those eggs all over their plants.
That is wild.
And if they have any plants that are infested with aphids, they'll put the actual live larvae in those blowers and do it that way.
Spraying things like spraying nematodes or whatever, spraying insect larvae. I really imagine that this is the future, that we're going to get away from these harsh, let's be honest, wartime chemicals. A lot of these sprays were derived from, you know, chemicals left over from World War II.
Right.
So it's like we're going to get away from those, and this seems like such a logical solution if it's effective.
Well, thankfully, most of those crazy chemicals aren't even legal for cannabis anyway, and half of them aren't legal for even ornamentals now, thankfully.
Yeah, that's true. And we're coming around even on things that have been used for decades up until very recently, like, you know, like endosulfan and stuff like that. But there's also, it's more about the grower education, I feel, because you can still get this stuff. Like,
For sure.
Yeah, like in the grower scene in California or whatever, like you can find this stuff. If you don't know any better, if no one's taught you, you know, go and get some predator bugs, go and get some Dr. Zymes, you know, enzyme pest eliminator, stuff like that. You're just going to, hey, this stuff works. I'll use this Pylon. I'll use this Avermectin, whatever it is, right?
Avermectin, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I'm all for it, man. I love what you're doing. Any final thoughts on aphids? I have lots of other questions about lots of other bugs.
Yeah, I mean, just prevention. We could probably do a whole
show on aphids, I bet.
We probably could. Yeah, like I said, man, it's just all about prevention with the aphids. If you call up the insectary and you say, oh man, I've got 40% of my plants are infested with the cannabis aphid. They're all over the stems. They're just wreaking havoc. I can't control them with chemicals. What do I do? It's going to be tough. So really getting these natural enemies in the crop beforehand, that's going to go a long, long way.
And when you're working with these growers, is the real nuclear option to start over always on the table? Like, do you have to recommend that to some of the people who approach you, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It really is. Like, there's always the balance of, well, I don't want to throw out this plant that's worth X number of dollars, but if the pests that are on it spread, that's going to potentially make me lose even more money. So
is anyone going to even want to buy it if it's so destroyed by the end of the run? If it is your livelihood, that's a real, that's a real issue. If you're just smoking it, you're obviously going to have loss of expression from the stressed plant, but there really isn't anything wrong with smoking a little bug carcass, I can't imagine. And I've talked to a couple people about this, right? So I guess it's a balance.
It really is. you just kind of have to figure out what your own personal threshold is.
Right, what your values are.
As well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Before we get back to Greg, let's give some love to AC Infinity, one of my favorite partners. Just go to acinfinity.com for all your ventilation needs. Promo code GROWCAST20 gets you 20% off, but only for a few days. That promo code expires April 1st. So go get an AC Infinity fan from acinfinity.com today. Promo code GROWCAST20 for a whopping 20% off. Based in Los Angeles, California, AC Infinity provides the best inline ducting fans. Backed by their 2-year customer support, their fans are incredible. They turn on whenever you need them to, whether it's a timer at a certain temperature or humidity point. You can control multiple fans with the same controller. You can get alarms to tell you when your humidity is getting too high or your temperature. These are the best fans on the market, people. There are no fans that we stand behind more than AC Infinity fans. Their PWM, or pulse width modulation, controlled EC motors pulse the motors down instead of reducing the voltages to control fan speed. You've heard Wolfman talk about that. Reducing the voltages heats up the motor, which is not good, producing that heat. The PWM EC motor is where it's at. It runs quieter than all other fans. It lasts 67,000 hours, and it is much more energy efficient. acinfinity.com. These are the best fans on the market, guys. Go get it with the promo code GROWCAST20 before it expires April 1st. Tell them we sent you. And that's all, folks. acinfinity.com. All right, let's get back to Greg. And let me ask you this. What have you been seeing other than the cannabis aphid? Like, what's in your world right now as far as cannabis pests?
The only cannabis pest that I'm really dealing with at the moment for my growers, a few people have thrips. Thrips really aren't my biggest concern in cannabis. They're annoying. They'll scar the leaves a little bit. They don't really mess with the buds. I don't think thrips are going to reduce your yield all that much unless they are just incredibly out of control.
Right.
But like I said, thrips, they're not my number one concern. Yeah, we want to get rid of them. We don't want them there for sure. But
I can deal with
low levels of thrips. Exactly.
Okay. What would you recommend if someone has a thrip problem and they want to unleash some biocontrols of some kind?
Yeah. So the first step is, well, and like I said, with biocontrol, it's 90% prevention anyway.
Right.
So the first step in not getting thrips, and broad mites actually, broad mites, the same predatory mite that goes after thrips larvae also loves to eat broad mite.
Oh, okay. And give us that name.
So it's Amblycinus cucumeris is the Latin name, and most people just call them cucumeris.
Nice. Okay. And is this something we can get at from the insectary?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the number one things that we produce.
Oh, nice. What are your top sellers?
Well, for cannabis, it's definitely cucumeris, and then Chrysoprila, the lacewings.
Nice.
And then both of the aphidias wasp, just because cannabis, the cannabis aphid is such a big problem right now. That's a lot of what's going into cannabis right now is cucumeris and then the aphid protections. Mm-hmm.
I know I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but that's how we do it here on GrowCast. Can anyone apply these sorts of biocontrols? Should anyone be concerned if they're in a certain climate or they have a certain type of setup or anything like that?
Yeah, so each setup is a little bit different. So that's gonna make it variable as far as application methods mostly. Say you've got really tiny clones, and those are going to be potted up within a couple of weeks. Well, you wouldn't want to put those sachets on those tiny clones because, well, for one, the clones couldn't hold the sachet up, and two, that sachet is going to last about 4 weeks or so. And if you're going to transplant those in a couple of weeks anyway, there's no point in having them on there.
Right.
So you would really want to broadcast the predatory mites as opposed to using the sachets. Once the plants are big enough to hold a sachet, yeah, absolutely put a sachet on there.
That's
and
really cool.
Those sachets are basically little breeding systems for the mites. So the predatory mites that we have, the Cucumerus, the Californicus, the Gorskeeve, whatever, they all also come in little sachets. And what's in those sachets are, so the sachets have a bran in them. That bran is inoculated with a fungus and a yeast. Then there's a little bran mite in the genus Tyrophagus that eats that culture, the fungus and the yeast. And then the predatory mite, whether it be Cucumerus, Gorskeeve, Californicus, whatever, they eat that little bran mite.
They jump on them. They jump them while they're having a nice meal.
Yeah, pretty much. So that makes it a whole little breeding system inside that sachet. And then over about a 4 week period of time, you'll get the predatory mites running out of a little tiny hole in the sachet.
That's so cool. That's super, super cool. Do you have to keep reapplying constantly? Like, I know that they have to have a food source to survive, obviously, but like, are there any, I guess the ultimate beneficial insect would be one that could, you know, kind of spread throughout your room, but still not affect your plants, but still go after the pests. Does that make any sense what I just said?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have any kind of a super bug out there.
Right.
If somebody finds one that's native to North America, they'll be very, very rich. Exactly. We will start producing it immediately.
Interesting.
But no, so you're definitely right. You do have to reapply these things. It's not just like a one and done type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the great thing about the sachets is, like I said, they'll last you about 4 weeks.
Yeah, you just slap another one on.
Yeah, exactly. So cool. Exactly. But especially for the Cucumerus, we're talking about thrips control. So Cucumerus will eat the first larval stage of Western flower thrips, which is the pretty much the number one species that people find in cannabis and even ornamentals. They'll eat the first larval stage of the Western flower thrips. Mm-hmm. They'll also eat broad mite. The jury's still out on this one, for russet mites. I've seen literature that says, oh, Swirsky is number one mite for russet mites. that's the predatory mite that you want to use for russet mites. I've seen other research that say, oh, Andersoni is the only one that you want to use. From what I've personally seen, if you get enough Cucumerus in your crop and you have enough of them that are hungry enough, they're going to take care of some russet mites. It's not like they're just going to completely ignore them if they're hungry if enough, they're like hungry I said.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so exactly. Maybe it's not their preferred meal, but you've seen some effectiveness.
Right. Right. And the thing about Cucumerus is they are the most affordable predatory mite. Which is great for getting them in really high numbers in your crop.
If you have that large size or you need to buy a lot, do you see the price coming down anytime soon?
I mean, the prices kind of are what they are. And,
I don't know how that works with bugs. It's not like, you know, manufacturing.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, these are living things. And, like I said, I don't know if the prices are going to come down anytime soon.
That's interesting though, because if it's like that market must just set itself, you know what I mean? Like if we add more supply to it, like if more people start you know, beneficial insectaries, usually in some other sector that would directly relate to a lower cost. But if you're like farming these bugs, or how does that work anyways?
So it really depends on the species of bug you're talking about. For the predatory mites, you can raise predatory mites in the size of like a walk-in closet, because they're basically just in tubs. Uh-huh. And you feed them the bran mite and they reproduce, and that's how you do it.
Okay.
Not quite as simple as that, obviously, but we actually, our production manager, he is like the predatory mite guru. He has been working with predatory mites for like 30 something years at least.
Wow.
So he really knows how to raise some predatory mites. But if you're raising something like, for example, Phytophthalus persimilis, which is another predatory mite that the literal only thing in the world that they eat, or that they're known to eat anyway, are two spider mites.
Oh, you just read my mind. I was going to transition into spider mites. So you have a mite specifically designed for the two-spotted spider mite.
Yeah. So like I said, the only thing in the world that they are known to eat are two-spotted spider mites. And if you're raising persimilis, well, you got to raise spider mites too. So that requires
a whole greenhouse. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So that requires a whole greenhouse. Raising, typically, I think bean plants is what they're grown on most of the time.
Just banking them in there, just letting them go nuts.
Pretty much, yeah. And then there's very specific and very proprietary ways of collecting just a persimilis so that nobody is sending you spider mites.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't want that guy coming over to my house, whoever's working in that greenhouse.
Exactly.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, so persimilis are actually one of the only predatory, or one of the only biocontrol agents in general, that you use reactively and not proactively. You can introduce persimilis as a prevention, but I mean, they're just going to starve to death if they don't have any spider mites. But to actually prevent spider mites, Neocelius californicus is another little predatory mite. One persimilis will eat either 20 spider mite eggs or 6 adult spider mites or some combination thereof every day. I believe californicus only does about 40% of that.
Oh, wow.
But it still makes them a pretty good preventative.
Sure.
The good thing about californicus is they'll eat other stuff besides spider mites. And they're a little bit longer lived, a bit more hardy than persimilis as well. Mm. So californicus is the prevention. The persimilis are the fire extinguisher.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And I can't get over this raising spider mites thing. It's like that guy must go into the greenhouse and look at the webbing forming and being like, this isn't enough. It's like the literally the exact opposite of the cannabis grower.
Exactly.
That's infinitely entertaining to me. Let me ask you this business question before we get back to bugs. Everything's still in Latin. So does someone need to come in? Beneficial Insectary needs to come and do some branding here, because lay people aren't going to catch on with these Latin names. Have you thought about branding, blends, renaming, making it a little bit easier for the lay person such as myself?
So we actually do have brand names.
There you go.
So, but it's based on the Latin name. And so using biocontrol, that's been done for decades. It actually started out mostly in the veggie industry. So like tomatoes and bell peppers and cucumbers and things like that. Moved over to ornamentals. Actually, Canada has been using beneficial insects in ornamentals for years and years. The U.S. is really starting to catch up with Canada as far as the ornamental front. But for cannabis, obviously that's really taking off now with the beneficials. But these names kind of are what they are, and that's what growers have known them as for years. So it's really difficult to change Amblyopsis cucumeris to something very, very brandable and very recognizable to people that already know what Amblyopsis cucumeris is.
True.
So
I'll tell you this, though. The average cannabis grower doesn't use beneficial insects, right? Let's be real. It's still a niche. And I know you're immersed in the world, and I know that it's growing every day because it is truly like the best solution. And I think it will continue to grow. But I think it's a balance between growers learning, right? Taking the time to sit down and, you know, memorize things like conversions and genus and species names and, you know, inputs on their nutrients, whatever it is. It's that balance of them learning. And then also, the catering to the other side, making it easy to just get it done. You know what I mean? I guess that's the balance right there.
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, Amblyopsis cucumeris, that is brand name from us, Ambliforce C. Everything from us is something force.
So oh, that's like great.
Aphidius pulmani is Aphidius force C.
Oh, that's great. Okay. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I love that. It sounds like you guys are on point with that.
Yeah, but unfortunately, like, even in the cannabis industry, like, nobody gives me a call and says, hey, can I get some Ambliforce? They always say, hey, can I get some cucumeris? Just right. Because that's
going to change, though, man. As this gets popularized and the people who aren't in the know get in the know, I think that's really, and that's happening now, I think that's really what's gonna change it. And that's why we appreciate people like you coming on this show, man. There are probably thousands of growers out there who are using sprays who are, you know, you're piquing their interest. You may be changing their path as a grower forever right now just by coming on the show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you mind if I just give some quick advantages of biocontrol over the chemical options?
Absolutely. Please.
Yeah. So, I mean, for one, chemicals are pretty expensive, especially ones marketed for cannabis. We actually call it the cannabis tax.
Totally.
Because these chemicals, if they were marketed to ornamentals, they would be many times less than what you guys are paying for them.
100%. Brand specific hurts.
Exactly. Exactly. Another advantage is you can have your lowest paid worker apply biocontrol, but you usually can't do that with pesticides.
Good point.
So it can save you on labor costs too. Also, just who wants to suit up in a 75-80 degree greenhouse and spray like that? So if you can start to avoid doing that, why not, you know?
Oh man, 100%. Especially because you know what really worries me, Greg? Is there, when the concentrate industry really started to blow up a couple years ago, and testing was going alongside with that. I love all the cannabis testing that we do in this industry. We were finding that certain sprays would not show up in flower tests, but then would show up in concentrate tests from that flower. Somehow it was like the concentration process was bringing it out.
Interesting.
So I don't even know how that works, but I remember that headline from a couple years ago, and it's like, listen, there are unforeseen effects for what we're doing, right? This whole modern science thing with synthetic fertilizers and pesticides and all of it has been great, but there are ancient practices that we're ignoring, and we're going to suffer those consequences. They talk about rotating crops in the Bible. They talk about it in the Old Testament. You know what I mean? I think that we're having to relearn these sorts of things, like, I don't know, don't spray poison on your plants that you're going to eat, or don't just grow one crop in the same field until the soil is toast. I mean, this is really ancient stuff that we're kind of relearning. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, with biocontrol, I mean, you've literally got thousands of little employees searching your plants for you.
That's awesome.
Trying to control the pests as best they can.
That's exactly right, man. I love that. We covered two spotted spider mites. We covered thrips, covered aphids. Do you have anything for fungus gnats? What do you recommend people do for fungus gnats?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So if you have an active fungus gnat infestation, nematodes are great. So you can either sprench them, spray them on the foliage, and then get them into the soil.
What did you just call that? Sprench them?
Sprench, yeah. So basically spray to runoff and then keep going until it actually drenches the plants as well, like the actual soil or cocoa or whatever your media is.
Okay.
Or you can just do a straight up drench as well. So nematodes are great. They're not super persistent in the soil or the media, meaning they just don't stick around that long if they don't have anything to eat. So for prevention, you can get, I was talking earlier about Delosia coriaria. Some of your listeners may know it better as Atheta coriaria. That's the old name was Atheta. Entomologists actually changed the genus that they're in from Atheta to Delosia. So we call them Delosia now. But they're a little predatory rose beetle. They love to eat fungus gnat larvae. And a very, very underrated aspect of what they do is they will also eat pupating thrips. Because when a thrip pupates, it drops into the soil.
Right.
So they'll also eat the
snack on those if they're down
there. Exactly. Sure. Yeah. And breaking that part of the thrips life cycle is huge. But in addition to Delosia, there's a little predatory mite that lives in the top layer of the soil. It's called Stratiolalaps schematis. Going back to these Latin names, I know that's a terrible one. it actually used to be called Hypoaspis miles. That's another one that the Latin name changed. So your growers may know them better as Hypoaspis, but they're called Stratiolalaps now.
Mm-hmm.
They do a great job for fungus gnat larvae, and they'll eat pupating thrips as well.
Is basically everything you're listing available on greenmethods.com?
Yeah, it definitely is.
That's so great, man, because people are asking, where can I get this stuff? And I got to tell you, sometimes I get vague answers from IPM specialists because it oftentimes really depends on the situation, right? Like your location, your specific type of pest, like down to the species, down to the subtype, right? a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. People will oftentimes, honestly, man, they will send me the blurriest, grainiest little pictures of some little speck on a leaf. And they're saying, what do I do about this? And I'm like, I don't know, man, get more pixels. Like, I can't see that. So
it's gotta be a proper diagnosis.
Yeah, exactly. Like you've got to know your enemy. Like you've got to know what you're going after so that you know the right beneficial to use against it.
Well, I guess, and I would never defend harmful chemicals, but I guess that's really why the sprays are effective, right? Spray this. You don't even have to identify what it is. You're just going to drench the thing in poison, but we really need to gain that extra level of understanding and just be able to identify it. Even if you're not going to learn everything yourself, go to greenmethods.com, go to a Greg Bryant and say, here's this thing. What can I do? You know what I mean? Like we really need to evolve that level, that layer of consciousness, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm not going to ask every grower out there to become an entomologist. That's just not reasonable.
Right.
But if you're going to grow plants, you've got to be at least somewhat familiar with insects and
right.
knowing the pests that are potentially going to be on the plants. So just do a bit of research. I mean, Google is your friend when it comes to stuff like that. Just figuring out what your common pests are. Talk to other growers in your area. See what they've been dealing with.
Is there a little bit better of a sample set of information on the internet for this because it has been around in other industries for a while? I mean, if you look up some cannabis specific stuff, it's a lot of conjecture. It's a lot of bad information, but this, insects were around before cannabis forums were. So do you find that, as you said, Google really will give you a lot of good information on this subject?
So if you're just going to just some random cannabis forum out there, I really can't speak to that.
Right.
But if you're looking at it on like a university website, those are typically anything.edu. That's typically going to get you pretty good information. government websites as well.
Right. Well, exactly. There's none of that for cannabis yet. So I feel that this specific subset, pest control, pest management with predatory insects, there's actually some good research out there. So.
Yeah. So there are actually some universities doing research, especially on hemp, but the pests for hemp are the same ones for growing cannabis as well. So if you find a university that's giving good information about hemp, you can apply that same information to cannabis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, cannabis can get a lot of the same pests that any other plant can. They're just ones that are more specific for cannabis, like crescent mites, broad mites to an extent.
Let's talk about broad mites. They're the worst. Holy shit. I've never seen an infestation like a broad mite infestation.
Yeah. So that goes back to the Emblesinius cucumeris.
That's your number one recommendation. You said they were also good for broad mites, but.
For sure. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So I've actually read it called a strong side effect on broad mite because their number one food is thrips larvae. But yeah, that strong side effect. Yeah. They love broad
mite. Nice.
So
I wish I'd known
that. If you have an active broad mite infestation, you're probably going to need to do some culling. You're probably going to need to throw out some of the worst plants. But if you get high enough numbers of cucumeris in the crop, just in general, a lot of times you can prevent that from spreading out too much at all.
Nice. Love it. Absolutely
and
love it.
Like I said, man, biocontrol is 90% prevention. So if you have a good amount of cucumeris in the crop, even starting in the clones, from clones all the way up to veg, you really should not have a broad mite problem.
Yeah, I like the protective side. What about pirate bugs? What are your thoughts on pirate bugs?
Yeah, so you were actually talking about thrips earlier, and then we got sidetracked.
That's how the show goes, my friend.
Oh, that's absolutely fine. I'm glad that we're coming back to it, though. So the pirate bugs, the Latin name is Aureus insidiosus. So a lot of most of the time, they're just called Aureus. They are great for knockdown of adult thrips. So like I said, with the cucumeris, the only stage of a thrips that they can eat is the first larval stage.
I see.
So makes them great for a prevention, makes them great when the thrips levels are still really low. But if you have a fly-in of adult thrips, say once it gets warm outside, they're not really going to be able to handle that much pressure. So for hotspots of thrips, Aureus are great. So, and the great thing about Aureus is they're just super aggressive. They'll kill up to about 80 thrips a day. Each one individual Aureus will, and they don't even eat them all. They just stab them with their face and walk away.
Whoa.
So their mouth part is basically like a very, very pointy straw. And they jab it into the thrips, and then if they're hungry, it's kind of like a thrips milkshake.
Like a swashbuckler. That's crazy. They just stab them?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've actually seen videos of Aureus with the thrips, like impaled on his mouth part, just walking around with it.
Wow, man. It's almost like they're the cats of the insect world. Like they just kill for fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They just do it for sport.
That's brutal. I love these
but,
guys.
But the great thing about Aureus is they're a generalist. So they do love thrips. They'll also help a bit with spider mites. They'll pick off an aphid or two here and there. Unfortunately, aphids reproduce just so quickly that Aureus can't keep up with the amount of pressure that aphids produce in the crop. So you definitely need other stuff in there, but they will help a bit with aphids.
Same with mites. I know they can eat mites, but not their preferred meal.
So they don't, as far as I know, they don't really have a preferred meal. They'll just kind of eat whatever they can catch. As long as it's, if they can catch it, they'll pretty much eat it.
Interesting. Yeah, man, I have so many questions. I want to ask you about how growing styles affect insects, how insects affect the plant. I would love to catch up with you another time if you're willing to come back on in the future, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely. This is fun.
Oh, man, you're the best. Thanks, Greg. Let's get one more in before we sign off, though. Talk about balancing using sprays with beneficial insects, because I imagine you don't want to spray something that would kill the beneficial insects. Do you select your sprays? Do you not spray when you're applying? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so it's just kind of all about finding that balance. If you're using beneficial insects, especially from the very beginning, starting in your clones, if you do have an outbreak of pests that, for whatever reason, is just sort of overrunning that section of your crop, and you've added more beneficials and changed the species of the beneficials that you're using, and it's just still not quite working, spot spray it. Depending on the pest, like an oil spray, even like an azadirachtin sometimes. But spot spraying is your friend. You don't have to nuke the entire place if you find a little hot spot of the pest.
Okay. I like that.
Because you don't want to have to start your entire beneficial program over because you found one little hot spot pest.
Good point.
So just keep in mind that, like I said, hot spot spraying is definitely a thing. And then finding the least harmful spray as well. So, for example, if you're finding a little pocket of thrips and you're only using cucumerus and you're only using, say, Chrysophila, the lacewings for aphid control, you can spray that with Mycotrol or Botanic Guard or any of the other Bavaria Bassiana products. And those have no effect on the predatory mites, very little effect on the lacewing larvae, and you can use those just fine. So finding the right product to use can be very helpful too.
Oh, that's incredible. Now, do you allow people to reach out to you, to reach out to the insectary if they have questions like that? Hey, I've got these beneficials and I've got this pest. Is there something I can spray? Is that like the perfect question for Greg Brandt?
So we don't really recommend sprays just sort of as a rule.
Oh, I like that. Okay. Hard stop on the sprays, but what you're saying is basically what I said, which is it's a balance of finding sprays that don't interact and then not blasting your own beneficials.
Well, exactly. And it's more of a legal thing for us because certain states, you've got to actually be licensed to give chemical and pesticide recommendations.
Sure.
So just as a rule, we don't like to do it.
Yeah. What kind of insectary would you be if you recommend people spray?
Yeah. But no. So like if somebody is having a specific problem, and I've had growers in the past that I've done XYZ spray and it works and it didn't kill their beneficial program, I'll gladly give them that advice.
Right.
And I just always phrase it as, hey, this is what's worked for other people. So you can try this too and see if it works for you. But no, like we don't give like specific written recommend like spray advice.
Right. Well, why don't you shoot out where people can find you if they like this interview, they want to give you a follow. Where can they find you? Where can they find the Beneficial Insectary? At Beneficial Insectary on Instagram. And then your personal Instagram, Greg?
Yeah, so I don't post very much. I should start doing that. I really should. But I'm at GB_bugs. So like Greg Bryant underscore bugs. On Instagram, feel free to give me a message on there. Like I said, I don't post much, but I'm going to try to start doing that in the future.
You should, man, because people really are interested in this subject. People like to see the pictures, the microscope pictures of the bugs on there, or this bug killing that bug, or the damage that it left behind. People eat that up. And also, you were great, man. You've really got a fountain of knowledge, and you're great on air. So I'm sure people would love to consume more content if you're willing to put it out. And we'd love to have you back. Like I said, seriously, I will be reaching out to you in the next few weeks, I'm sure.
Yeah, I guess I'm always happy to talk about bugs.
You're the man. We appreciate you. Thank you for everything you're doing in the world of insects, and specifically, selfishly, for us cannabis growers. We thank you, sir.
Yeah, of course. Very happy to do it.
Awesome. Everybody listening, give Beneficial Insectary a follow. Give Greg a follow. Give Growcast a follow at Growcast. And follow me at Jordan River IG. You can get to me personally. Send in your questions. We're doing the Ask Dr. Coco series. Send in your question for Greg and Mary Beth and the IPM specialists. We love hearing from you guys. All right, this is Greg Bryant and Jordan River signing off, wishing you the best of luck in your gardens. Be safe out there, folks, and grow smarter. That's our show for today, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in. I do appreciate it. Make sure you're subscribed. Give us a good rating and review. You can apply to be on the Homegrown Helpers Rob Smith Show by going to thehomegrownhelpers.com/apply. We're looking to speak to home growers just like you out there. Shout out to Illinois Cannabis Consulting, Rizo Rich at IllinoisCannaConsulting.com for all your consultation needs in the Midwest and beyond. Let's get growing. And finally, shout out to Jay Blank for doing the beat, SoundCloud.com/JayBlanked. Thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned for more Growcast, mygrowpass.com for membership. Love all you guys. Take care. Bye-bye.